as I grew older, I tended to really befriend Europeans. There was something about a similar like third culture-ism, I think, there that I just really embraced. But I would always be told by my friends, "Oh, you're not really American. You're like different." And I'm like, well, what does that even mean? Because if I go to India, let me tell you, I am the most American woman I've ever met.
Hello and welcome to the Journey Onwards podcast. My name is Anand Datani, and I am your host for this season three showdown of Third Culture Conversations. And if this is the first, but undoubtedly not the last episode that you will be listening to, then welcome to the tribe. Each week, I bring you another inspiring and fascinating guest, some of the most brilliant minds that I've had the fortune to connect with, and all who share that one common trait of being third culture individuals. Third culture kids will have spent significant parts of their upbringing outside of their parents' culture, and my guest today is a perfect example of this. Shavika Singha is America-born, but she has roots that extend through South Africa and India. Today's episode is one of my favorite conversations because Shavika gives an open and raw account of the influence of her family figures, how she navigated between not being American enough for the Americans, but also not Indian enough for the Indians, what she felt of the coveted Silicon Valley tech world that she found herself working in, as well as how she went on that internal journey to closer align with her authentic self. I put Shavika to work in this conversation with some not so straightforward questions, and the responses and perspectives that she gives will undoubtedly get you thinking and give you something to reflect on. So don't hesitate to get in touch with me or Shavika if you have something to ask or share. Both of our contact details are going to be in the show notes. It's a pleasure as always to have you here with me, so I hope you are ready for episode 6 of Third Culture Conversations. Welcome to the Journey Onwards podcast, Shavika. I am excited to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to do this.
Oh, me too. And one of the reasons being that I don't know if you know, but you are in fact the first time that you will be a guest who is a family member of another guest that I've had on the show. Excluding obviously season one where I interviewed members of my family. But yeah, as of season three, you are in fact the cousin of Vic Judge, who was on episode one. So what is amazing about that is I have this reference point where I can compare back to that episode. And I know that you don't know because you've stuck to your word and not listened to that episode yet.
Yes, I have not heard it. And let me tell you, it's very difficult to not listen to the podcast episode for the last week. So I'm very excited to listen to it after we're done with this episode.
But you stuck to your word. You said you weren't going to listen to it until we recorded this conversation. Yeah. And you stuck to it. So I'm impressed. It was a good one as well. It ended up being in two parts because, I mean, you know him well. He is a great storyteller and had a lot to share, as I'm sure you do too.
Yeah, I think it's a family trait.
What I'd like to do is let you lead the way, but let's go with your family's backstory and then investigate like how that played a role in your mindset and the person you became.
Yeah. Well, should we pick off where Vic left off? And I'm just kidding. I have no idea what he said. But okay. Yeah. So my mom was born in South Africa, as was Vic's dad, their brother and sister. That was during apartheid. Very tough time for the country. My dad was born in Dalhousie in India in the north, and that's like near the Himalayas. And around the time my mom was 13, she moved to England to kind of get out of the country, and was raised by an aunt and uncle. And my dad in his 20s moved to Canada. And around the 80s, they met in San Francisco. My sister and I were born, and that's sort of the origins of our side of the family.
So you said that your dad moved to Canada, which is really interesting because my dad was born in Kenya, but he moved to Uganda when he was really young. And then following what happened in the early 70s where Idi Amin took control, he led to the exile of the 50,000, 80,000, I hear different numbers, but ultimately all the Ugandan Indians from Uganda had to leave. And because of the connection that Uganda had with the UK, there was a lot of British passport holders. The majority of the outflux of Ugandan Indians from Uganda was to the UK, I think about half. Second was actually to Canada.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know what that strong connection is to why Canada was second, but in the case of your dad, do you know why he chose Canada as the place to go?
You know, I would love to actually have an answer for that. My dad and the dad side of the family are one of those that you never really get a straight answer. So you have to ask the question like five different ways, and then you might get lucky and get the answer once you sift through a lot of the talking points around it. So I don't actually know what led them to Canada. I know that he was there with some of his brothers and sisters, and then came to San Francisco. And then my dad, started in real estate in the Bay Area and then quickly moved into tech. And that is his love. He loves tech.
That is really interesting, because that's quite entrepreneurial what he did, especially back then. Because now, actually, let me take it one step back. So entrepreneurship, that's a word that, you know, has become very new age and forward thinking and kind of leads the next gen of innovation. But when you boil it down, entrepreneurship has been around for centuries, or even as long as we can remember.
Absolutely.
Because at any stage where there's been a revolution or a significant leap forward in social or economic development, that usually has come from an entrepreneurial mindset. And so, linking it back to my own backstory, the Indians that were in West India, they saw opportunity for business and resources in East Africa. They got on a boat, they took a risk, and they went across in search to develop something bigger than what they had in India. And so hearing what your father did, it essentially is following this same concept where, you know, back then when tech wasn't this huge booming thing that it is now, he decided, he saw something, it was a bit of a risk, and he took that risk. And so essentially fitting in this bracket of a very entrepreneurial mindset way of doing something.
Absolutely. You know, and it's so funny, like this will go into a whole arc of sort of my life and how I've come to be where I am now today. But, you know, my mom's side of the family is also very entrepreneurial. And my granddad on my mom's side was born in South Africa, but his family came as entrepreneurs as part of the sort of African boom. And today, I mean, our family is still there. We have a huge, huge family in South Africa, and most of them are entrepreneurs. And the same thing with my dad's side. So, you know, it's taken up until my 30s to truly embrace this side of me. But absolutely, it's certainly a family trait. And I think there's some unique things that come with it.
And did you see that while growing up as being different to the friends and people that you grew up around? Like, was their family background also filled with this kind of entrepreneurial spirit?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if it was an entrepreneurial spirit. I think the difference that I tended to see was cultural.
Right.
And I never really understood why it was different, you know? You don't really realize you're different until society tells you you are.
Hmm.
Right? And so I kind of just assumed everyone was like our family at home. And then I realized, no, we eat very different food and we have very different conversations and very different expectations.
Yeah, I completely get that. Because, you know, when growing up, you are essentially in this bubble that is the family that you grow up around. And that is really all you know. And then as you get older, then you start to make friends in the areas around you. But even the friends you make, they fit within that bubble of the society that you grow up in, the school that you go to. And so outside that bubble, you probably don't resonate or get those people who don't fit into those, you know, those same tastes and beliefs of that bubble that you're in. And so, you know, it's quite easy to say like, oh, how can that person vote for a certain party? Or how can that person like that kind of music or that kind of lifestyle? But you have no way to really reflect with that because you haven't grown up in that kind of surrounding and environment.
Absolutely.
To truly grasp that.
Yeah. It's where I grew up in the Bay Area, it's quite diverse. So at least I'd find some comfort with East Asian cultures because there was some similarities. And then we had a lot of sort of standard Americans, white Americans. We had very few black people growing up where I was. And that was just the norm. So it was highly like dominated by Asians, whether it's South Asian or East Asian.
Right.
But then again, being a South African, like Indian from my mom's side, and being raised with that culture, both from my mom and my grandmother, it brought on a whole new challenge in terms of culturally connecting with even Indians, because it's such a niche culture in and of itself. And we're already one generation removed from the motherland.
And there's two things I would like to know. Let's start with the first one, as it makes sense to start in order. When your parents were asked by people, "Where are you from?" what would be the response that they would give?
Uh-oh. Yeah. That's a great question. My mom would absolutely say South Africa through and through. She loves South Africa. That's her home. Those are her people. That's where her family is, the land of her parents. Although my grandmother was born in India, but she moved to South Africa when she was 17. So she was also proud to be South African. My dad would absolutely say Indian through and through, and he would say, "Your mother's not even Indian."
I love that.
Yeah.
And then, so to the second part of that question, what did you say when you were asked that question? And also, has it changed?
It's so funny. It hasn't changed, but it has. And it's because growing up, I would just repeat what my mom said, right? My mom is South African, my dad's Indian, I'm American. And I didn't really understand what that meant at that time. Now, the older I get, I'm actually walking in that with a lot more confidence and understanding around what that means. And it's taken time to sort of go through life with a multicultural perspective. I have a large British family as well. So we're so spread out that just really understanding myself in the grand scheme of it all has been challenging. Only now in my 30s to really understand what it actually means and say it with more confidence and say it as if it's my own words rather than something I'm just repeating.
And do you think that's because you began to start questioning and asking why? Or if not, then do you know what was the reason that your mindset started to shift?
Well, that would go down a different rabbit hole. I think what made my perspective a little different was also my connection to spirituality. And what I mean by that is, as a child, I really struggled with this concept of like school, work, marriage, all of these things. As an Indian girl, you're taught you go to school, you get a good career, get your degree, right? Then you get married, then you have kids, and you teach them all the things I'm teaching you right now. And I was always like, why? I don't understand. This doesn't make any sense. And so that was sort of my first clue into like, oh, I'm different. I think I'm asking why. And I don't think many people are asking why. Now, I assumed that was because of my culture for many years. And in some cases, I think it was. Like, I think I had a very natural connection to the beliefs of my culture. But as I grew older, I realized it's also just it's a different lens of life. But I'm thankful to have a rich culture that kind of supports that paradigm.
I think it definitely plays a role, this third culture upbringing. I mean, I can't really speak for, say, the non-third culture kids because I haven't lived that life. But when you grow up in this existence where you go to school and you act and behave and socialize in a certain way versus when you're at home where you eat different foods to what you'd maybe get in school. You celebrate certain festivals that will be different to your friends. Maybe you speak in a different way, you have certain values and beliefs that you follow. Then, at one point, naturally, you will begin to question both sides. And so, say when you meet someone new or you go on holiday and someone asks you, "Where are you from?" Do you default immediately to just saying, "I live in this location?" So, for me, would I say, "Oh, I'm from London?" Or do I say, "Yes, I'm from London, but I'm Indian by background"? So it becomes the question of what response do I give? But maybe more importantly, why do I give the response that I give?
Yeah. We're always hyphenated, right? We're British hyphen Indian or something like that. Indian American. It's funny too, because I never really got that choice. It was always put on me. Anytime I traveled outside the country, I was always told, oh, you're not American. You're different. You look Persian. You look Italian. You look this.
Yeah,
You know,
yeah.
everyone wanted to put some label on me. And it's funny because I tended, as I grew older, I tended to really befriend Europeans. There was something about a similar like third culture-ism, I think, there that I just really embraced. But I would always be told by my friends, oh, you're not really American. You're like different. And I'm like, well, what does that even mean? Because if I go to India, let me tell you, I am the most American woman I've ever met. You know, so I think there's that piece of it. And then the other piece of it is growing up in the States. You know, Asian cultures are so collective. It's about, your life isn't about you. It's about your family. And in America, that's just not the case. It's a capitalistic individual society. And it is about the individual for the individual. And I think something about that struck me as odd, but I didn't have the language for it until really my late 20s, I'd say.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you say that, because it reminds me of, so when I was in China, I had to give a keynote speech, and the topic was cross-cultural communication, because it was comparing, you know, how people express and communicate in America versus in the local Chinese market, and then ultimately how that leads to business conversations. But one of the key points that I spoke about was how in the American society, it's, you know, almost encouraged and revered this idea of self-promotion. And, you know, it's ultimately labeled as branding. So there's a lot of I achieved XYZ, I did this, me, that kind of language. And then there's also the sort of promotion of children. So, you know, my child got into Harvard, or my son or daughter made it to the top league, let's say, of, you know, their NBA college team. Whereas in the Chinese culture, the idea is that, you know, celebrations, wins and successes, they're all done in the form of on behalf of the community. So we achieved this, our family did this, you know, or it's, you know, our culture or our sect. So it's very much that wholesome, more communicative, more community language of doing it as not as an individual, but as a group.
Absolutely. Yeah, actually, and funny enough to connect it to Vic, your previous guest, his mom, my aunt, had taught me, you know, one time I had gone over to England, and she said, you know, Americans are the only people I meet that within the first 2-3 minutes of meeting them, they'll tell you exactly what they do professionally. And I was like, wow, you're so right about that. I never considered that, right? That we assume that identity as if that is us.
I'd say I agree with that. You know, I've kind of had similar interactions, and, you know, broadly speaking, I do share that view. But I'd love to get your perspective on something. So I had a similar conversation with my friend who lived in Sweden, and we had similar experiences. So when I traveled there, but he lived there for a longer time, and so he kind of affirmed it. But when you speak to Swedish people who, on the whole, are, say, quite closed, especially to outer cultures, maybe because they're just not as used to it, but it very much is the case that by default, say, question number 3 will be, what do you do? You know, it'll be, what's your name? Where are you from? What do you do? And not in a way of they can't be bothered to think of what else to ask you. I think it is just how they're programmed to interact with new people. But what is interesting is if they do find some commonality or some relevance to the answer you give to what do you do, if they then have something to relate to, then they become very open.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I've thought about this a lot, because that did put me a little bit down a spiral of like, oh gosh, am I one of those people as an American that's like so quick to tell you what I am and put myself out there, you know, which I was thankful for a multicultural lens there. I am an optimist, and I tend to err on the side that I believe in my country, as troubled and crazy as it is, we really are open-minded. And I know that that can sound counterintuitive, especially with how some of the racial relations and horrible times that we've had recently are. But you know, like we truly are open-minded as a country and as a people. And I think we embrace this idea of like you can love your job. Like you can create anything that you want and you can be it and you embrace it. So if people do, if they're like quick to tell you what it is, it could be for business, marketing, sales, you know, the typical, you know, those people, we've talked about this before, people who are always on, right? But it could also be that they found a way to embrace their true nature and actually walk that path. And I've met some incredible people like that who you are like, you literally just get paid to be you.
I
That's
love that.
your you and you couldn't live any other way, could you? There's nothing else in the world that you could do other than be you, and you've found a way to make money doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I really love that point because it really links back to something that I realized about myself when I thought about it. So I began my sort of full-time career in finance, and it was a good job, you know, well-paying, good reputation, and I enjoyed it for a while. But it did reach that point, which a lot of people reach, where I was going into work and thinking, like, why am I coming here? I'm not driven by this at all. And it was a case where I just had these other ambitions, be it open-minded, this bigger vision of what I wanted to achieve. And so I started internally, subconsciously, kind of looking at the people around me and just thinking, like, almost in an egotistical way, feel a bit above them because I think in this different way. And then I used to question, like, how are they just content in this space, right? But then what I realized afterwards was, like, hang on, if either they're content and satisfied and enjoy what they do, or they're just content in being in that below maybe their true potential, whatever I saw it as, but I was still going into a place that I knew I wasn't content with and didn't want to become the people around me, then I was in the wrong for still going into that environment. And so it goes back to what you were saying about being able to find that place within yourself, you know, where you ask yourself those questions and find your identity and feel satisfied or that you've succeeded in becoming yourself, right? And always being on with yourself. So it took my own kind of effectively questioning, what do I want to do? And it goes back to a really great book, which I'll recommend to anyone, called A More Beautiful Question by Warren Berger. And it talks exactly about this, that, you know, innovations, but also self-development and growth comes when you don't just ask, how can XYZ be better? But how am I, or how can I do something towards it? And so when I began to say that, how can I put myself in a position where I would be content? Then I realized I had to get that out of that environment.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I love the turn that this has taken because I have so many thoughts and feelings about this. But yeah, I mean, companies traditionally do not want you to be you. They just want you to execute. You're another wheel, a cog in the machine, another number for them, right? And I think what's different about our generation as sort of millennials is if we're really trying to break that down. And we're at the point now where we're like, okay, we all agree that we do need to participate in this society. Okay, not all of us agree. There's a lot of anarchists too. But you know, for those of us that want to participate in this society and recognize that this is the way that the dominant Western culture is, how do we make it less soul crushing? And I really think that that is bringing your true self to the office. And that's a really challenging thing. It feels like historically those were two contradicting things. You go to work, but you're not really yourself. You wear your suit. When you come home, you take it off, right? And it's just so funny. I mean, going back to this idea of this third culturism, like I there was no way that I couldn't be different at work. Like I just was because of the way that I was raised, right? And so I already felt the sense of otherness that was so hard to assimilate in a Western culture. I'm in tech currently, right? That's sort of my main thing. And what I found is that like even with all of the predominantly Indian and Asians that are in my industry, I can't connect with them, and then I can't really connect with the Americans as much. And so there's this disconnect. And it's really about embracing who you are and bringing that to the office. Because that's what fulfills people, right? And when you have that connection and you're in this sort of a heart-centered space, you're probably going to execute a lot better.
See, I love this because I think you would give a very interesting take on this. And it ties back into exactly what you're saying, third culture. It was a discussion that I remember being a part of where it was the idea of being authentic in the workplace. And then it comes down to the definition of how you can be, you know, how you can define whether you are being authentic. But it's this idea of when you go into work and you act a certain way in your work environment where you're not being fake as such, you're not pretending to be someone you're not, but you are putting on a different persona to one that you might be when you're on holiday with your friends, right? Or out for drinks with, or for your birthday, for example. Same with third culture, as you were saying. It's like, okay, so when you meet up with your school friends in the US versus when you go to a family dinner and you might wear like a Punjabi or a sari, and maybe you act in a different way and you talk about different things. Is that in itself being inauthentic because you're showing two different sides of yourself to two different groups and maybe they don't know that other side of you? Or is it okay to have these two different, and I don't know if I'm using persona as too strong a word, but I think you get where I'm going with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a great question. And honestly, I wouldn't know. I would love to put a bunch of, you know, third culture Indians from different backgrounds in a room and ask them, you know, that's the research in me being like, let's get some data on this. But for me personally, as an American woman that was born with a Hindu and Sikh influence, so this is coming from my Punjabi side on the Hindu and the Sikh side, with also the South African influence, with also the British influence, as an American, I found it so challenging to wear all of these different roles to different people. I mean, and it just cannot be done, right? When I'm with my Sikh family, I act differently. With the Hindu side of the family, I act differently. If I'm with Americans, it's totally different. If I'm with Europeans or my British side of the family, it's different. And I think just for me personally, at an early age, I just found it so exhausting to constantly manage and, you know, have a new face for every single person that I talk to, that quickly I just became me. And I think the most challenging place was actually at the office. Because you're right. I mean, let's just talk about the fact that you are in a room with hundreds of people, in a building with hundreds of people that you would never normally talk to. The whole thing is so completely unnatural. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Like, I have to talk differently. I have to set context for everything I'm about to say. I have to make sure not to step on everyone's toes. Right? So I think that culture, that work culture, is the one that actually beats it out of you the most.
Right.
I guess to put it simply, it wasn't an option for me to be anybody other than myself, because it just is too exhausting.
And so do you think that was a case of you being in the wrong place amongst some people who may have been in the right place? Like, you know, what brings people who share interests, right? Like, you know, when you go to university, or in the UK, when you go to university, in Freshers Week, you go to all these society stalls and find where your interests lie. If you like chess, if you like table tennis, if you like hiking, and then it's a good way to meet people who have those same interests so that you are around people that you want to be around because you share common goals or interests. In the same way, I fully get what you're saying with that work situation, because like I say, I had it in a big case where I no longer wanted to be where I was going. Surely people who have found the job for them are among people who have that same interest, like techies with other techies, right? They could talk about coding all day long and they probably love it.
Yeah.
And so they are being they don't actually have to pretend, but they don't have to hide that side of them. They can just be that. So do you think it was a case of you being like, I feel I'm being forced to be, and just by that feeling, it means I'm in the wrong place?
Yeah, well, so this is interesting. I mean, speaking about the tech industry more generally, you know, I think you're right. There's definitely a love for the sort of nerdiness of coding and all that means. And it tends to be more traditionally masculine, and I put that in air quotes, role. And because of that, our culture tends to be very male dominated, which is something, you know, tech industry has been very loud about and definitely wants to shift. But, you know, there are engineering concepts at my company that are named after Iron Man. Like, I've never seen that movie. I have no idea. Like, I'm not into Iron Man. It's not my favorite superhero. I don't even know. Is he considered a superhero? I have no idea. But
he's the brains. He's the leader behind the superhero movement.
Okay. So see, it's even perfect. Even better for a company, right? He's the brains. He's the CEO of the superhero movement. Exactly. Totally. So they would love that. But, you know, as a female, it is challenging culturally to kind of connect and find a place in. And often, unless you are someone who has the technical chops, you kind of looked at like, well, what are you bringing to the table? You know? So there is a piece of that. I think for me, that's probably the main othering that I've felt. And then certainly, as I've mentioned, you know, being an American Indian woman, I can't connect with Indians. We're very different people. And then being American, you know, it's like, I'm not American enough for the Indians, or for the Americans, and I'm not Indian enough for the Indians. So I'm somewhere in between.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I love to get this perspective. So what advice or suggestions would you give to people who are kind of going down this path of maybe either being in a workplace or in a social circle where they don't really feel themselves?
Oh, that's a great question. Shameless self-promotion and plug, hire a coach. My next venture is I'm starting a coaching business. And I really mean it. And not just because, you know, hire a coach, but because introspection is key. And the way that we learn about ourselves is through other people. You know, sometimes there's this trope of sort of like, you know, you have some friends who are single and they're like, oh, well, I just have to really be comfortable with me before I'm able to be in a relationship, right? I think that's ridiculous. I think you can, there needs to be a degree of comfort, self-comfort, right? But we're relational beings. We connect by talking to others. We understand ourselves through the eyes of others. And that's what we are as human beings. So I think developing a relationship with someone, it can be friends, it can be family, it can be mentor as well. But diversifying your social network enough and the people that are around you so that you can continue to be introspective and really learn who you are and what you want to bring to the table.
That's amazing.
Authenticity is key. Coming back to like, what is your goal? What's the mark you want to leave? Who do you want to be? And then how do you do it? How do you execute that vision?
And I think a big part of that, as you've so well said, is asking yourself the right questions. But also, and I think that's where coaching ties into it, is it really does help to have someone to be able to ask those questions for you. And so, you know, something that's really interesting is, you know, if you look at Serena Williams, Tiger Woods, Ronnie O'Sullivan, people will easily identify them as the best in their niche and for their gender and in their niche, right? They all have coaches. Mm-hmm. Why does someone who is the number one in the world at what they do and on their day cannot be beaten still have a coach? Because they need someone who can ask the questions of how can they improve? How can they get even better? Where are their flaws? Where are their weaknesses? And so it all comes down to having someone who can ask the questions, even though they're not as good at whatever it may be.
Absolutely.
There's coaches and mentors, right? Mentors are normally someone who are someone you aspire to want to be like in that skill set. Whereas a coach is someone who's like, I may not be as good at you as whatever you're trying to be or whatever you're trying to figure out, but I will be able to ask you the right questions that maybe you haven't been able to ask yourself so that you can answer it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And kind of tying back to this earlier point of, you know, as you mentioned, walking through your finance job and walking through those double doors and being like, oh, why am I here? Right. So many of us, the fortunate ones anyway, who have actually gone the path of doing especially as you know, children of immigrants. We went to the right school, we got the degree, we got the right job, we have maybe a little bit more disposable income, and we're setting up our life the right way, the way that we were taught. Well, if you were a kid that did that, you didn't have sort of the time or the ability to really figure out what it is that you really wanted, right? You were just executing a vision of your parents. It's not your own vision. To even take the time to have a vision for yourself and what it is that you want out of your life, that takes time and effort, and it's scary, especially for most of us who, if you're lucky, you get to do it in your 30s, you know, if you're lucky. So I think really just going back to this piece of like it, the work culture, the world we live in, it is unnatural. Frankly, it just is. We're not living tribally, and you don't have a small network of people. We know everything about what's going on in the world, or at least from someone's lens, anyway, someone's perspective of it. And we're constantly plugged into all of these different networks. It's an exhausting way to live. The only way that you can manage that is by being your most authentic self, and that is a journey in and of itself
Yeah, I love
to
that.
really come into that.
What you've said is, I love that a lot because something that I actually haven't touched on yet, but really do value, and I definitely think that needs to be shared, especially in this third culture conversation, this idea of, yeah, like when we look at our parents' generation, a lot of them just had to do what they needed to do and didn't have some, we can call it luxuries, but some of that space to be able to, exactly like you say, ask those questions and appreciate and figure things out, right? And your cousin, actually, Vic, we talked about this in it. So just giving you a little spoiler. And for anyone else who hasn't heard season 3, episode 1 yet, but he talks about the things that he realized his mum had to do. She had to raise 3 kids, but also go to work. And so it was a case of she had to get up at 5 and do what needed to be done so that the kids are okay, and then go to work, and then come back late, and then feed them, etc. She knew what she had to do as means of survival for herself and the best possible life she could give to her kids. There wasn't really that opportunity, like you say, for all of these other bits. But what we have, if we realize it and if we're lucky to, is that thanks to their efforts, sure, they have expectations of us, and we do owe it to them in a way to fulfill some of the expectations. But part of their hard work has given us this opportunity and freedom to be able to ask these questions and also take some action on it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it's so interesting because I think, you know, my mom absolutely executed the plan as according from her mom, you know. And one thing I love about my mother, and I tremendously admire her for, is that she sort of broke that tradition in her lifetime, and I'm now breaking that, right? So to be in a place where you know, you get to have a choice and you choose what it is that you want. It's a scary thing, but it can shift the dynamic of the family going forward. And I think for us, for Indians anyway, I can only speak to my own culture. So many of us are still kind of caught in this idea of like we have to execute the plan for our family because again of that collectivism, right? We live for the family, we don't live for ourselves. Something I really love about being American is having that different perspective of individualism and figuring out what it is about me that I want to bring to the world, you know, and having a balance between those two things, right? Doing it not in like, what's the word? Not because I'm casting my culture and my family aside, but because I'm really embracing me and because I have the opportunity to, like, I'm so fortunate that my family worked so hard, you know, that I have this incredible multi-generational, strong-minded women, people that executed this incredible plan to give me the freedoms and the liberties that I have. I don't want to waste that. Like, this is my chance to really thank them and show them that I honor them by really executing my freedoms because they didn't have that choice.
It's an amazing way of thinking and kind of mindset that you've got to. And one bit that you mentioned was finding what you want to bring to the world. And like you've mentioned, coaching is part of that. How do you think that your upbringing and that third culture lens that you live through, how did that contribute to you coming to this passion or ambition?
Yeah, that's so interesting. You know, truly, it actually is a generational thing. My grandmother, she did incredible things in South Africa. She moved there when she was 17. She started sort of microfinancing for women in our culture and wow. really taught women how to drive and just did incredible things in trying to empower women. So I would consider her a coach in some way. My mom, same thing. She came to England. She came to the U.S. She was number one saleswoman nationally for her company. Just crushed it, honestly, and didn't even go to college.
Wow.
And my mom also coached women throughout pretty much my entire upbringing. So I feel like I'm embracing something that comes from my family, to be honest. But it's also a sense of like, you know, as the American kid, I'm the one who's connected most to the American culture. And then I come home and I explain it to my mom and to my grandmother. So there's coaching at home for mom and nanny, right? And then there's sort of a difference that I'm bringing to my American friends. So I think just constantly wearing two perspectives has allowed me, really give me this beautiful gift of just like seeing things from different perspectives, you know? Not that I'm like at all an authority on it by any means, but it's just sort of my process and it just feels natural.
That's amazing because, you know, what I've taken from that is what you've been able to do is tie in the advantages and benefits of being a third culture kid where you have from birth these different perspectives. What you're essentially doing is saying, well, I can take from both and cross-pollinate the benefits of both worlds to provide to each of the sides that I'm tied into.
Yeah, I love that you said it like that. I didn't know that I did that. it sounds really nice when you put it in that pretty package, you know? It certainly was not without struggle and just despair growing up, right? Really trying to understand my place in it all. There were times, you know, especially growing up in America where like I was not even proud to be Indian. I was so ashamed of my culture because I just wanted to be white so badly. Because that's what they teach you, right? You get sort of indoctrinated into a dominant white culture. But unpacking that and like reconnecting with your roots, and you know, it's like I go to yoga and a white person teaches it to me, and now that's like my connection to my culture in some way. It's just so funny how it's all intermixed. But that, yeah, I love that you put it that way. I think it's really embracing what you are and where you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, really walking that path.
That's amazing. And so just to finish, when you say coaching, what's your vision of that? What do you see you coaching people for?
Yeah, that's a great question. Currently, what I want to focus on is what you would call the quarter life crisis.
Okay.
So it's people from ages 25 to 35.
I like the ambition that you see them only being a quarter of the way through at that age. So you have hope that we're going to live on till the 100 at least. Nice.
Yes. Yes, I think so. I think you can if you live well, if you eat well and your head and your heart's in a good place. I'm really into astrology for one thing, one being Indian, but also like millennial. It's very trendy these days. So there's this concept called the Saturn return. Have you heard of this?
I've seen it, but I think just as like the name of someone that they kind of tag themselves as this. So I don't know what it means, but I've seen it as a term. Yeah.
So I'm probably going to butcher it, but to the best of my ability of explaining it in this moment, Saturn return is this concept. So the Saturn has a 27 to 29 year rotation around the planet. I think it's like 28 years generally. So, between the ages of 27 and 29 of a person's life, Saturn will make a rotation around, basically, it'll be in the same place that you were born 27 to 29 years later. And the energy of this planet, so they say, is that it brings about challenges, it slows things down, and it's really like a time for you to consider things. So I don't know if you can think back to your ages of 27 to 29, but it was kind of a key period, perhaps. Maybe something happened that really shifted the way that you were going to start to live or think. It happens again in life. It happens in your 50s, which we know is a midlife crisis, and then it happens again later.
It's funny you say that because I actually remember my 29th birthday. I remember going out with friends, your cousin being one of them. I think both of them. I think AJ and Vic were both there. And I'd say from like 25 to 28, I was loving the kind of independence I had, the kind of work life, social life, all tying in together, earning good money and feeling like my own person. But I just remember getting to 29 and we were out somewhere and I was still enjoying being around the friends I was with, but I was just like, I think I'm done with this element of socializing, like going out, getting home late. I don't regret doing it when I did, but it just hit me on my birthday when I just looked around and I was like,
Wow.
I'm really glad to be around the people that I am, but I don't really want to be with them here. Not that I'm against anyone else who is here. People look like they're having a great time, but I was quite like contently done. And it was my 29th birthday, yeah.
Wow. Well, congratulations. Yes, like you got the memo, and it really is a rite of passage. For me, it was I was 27. I was starting to anticipate that I was not happy with the way that my life was. And I didn't really remember being conscious up until that point. I remember just sort of being a passenger to my own life. At 27, I had executed all the goals that I had, which is, I'm so fortunate to say that. But then I woke up and I was like, huh, how did I get here? I don't remember being intentional about it. Although I anticipated the Saturn return, let me just tell you, it kicked my butt. So for 2 years, I was just completely just unpacking a lot, trying to wake up, trying to get into this conscious place, only to really start dreaming and visioning. And that comes with its own challenges. And then it's a matter of executing those dreams and those visions for yourself, those goals, turning those dreams into goals and actually executing those. So that's what I hope to help people with. I find, and this is very true of third culture kids, we don't get the opportunity to dream, right? It's kind of going back to what we talked about earlier. We just execute. So if we can find a place or a space to make time to dream, what is it that you would do in your life? And then we'll work on how you get there later. But
Amazing.
yeah, that's the goal.
I love that. And just by hearing the way you talk about it and now understanding more about your kind of life journey, I think you're going to have a big impact with the people that you get in touch with. And I hope that, people listening, that even if just one person resonates, I hope they reach out to you. So I'll put your contact details in the show notes so people know how to get hold of you. But what would be the best way for people to reach out?
Oh, yeah, Instagram is probably the best way right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's at Shavika underscore Rhea, Rhea.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll put that in the show notes so people can get in touch. And yeah, like I
Thank
say,
you.
I think some people really hear what you've said and be like, wow, she gets it.
Well, I can't promise I get it, but I can promise I will ask you questions, and I can't promise that you get it. The person does, Everyone has their own inner wisdom.
Yeah, let's get it together.
Yeah, I love that. Maybe that should be my
That's not bad.
tagline, my
Yeah, that's
slogan.
kind of good.
Yeah,
You heard it here first. All of you people listening, I may have
I
to reach out to you as witnesses to where this came from. So
think
awesome. So yeah, just to finish with everyone, I do a quick fire final five. In fact, I may just call it the final
boy.
five because I like it to be quick fire, but some of the questions I have lined up for you, I'm happy for you to expand a bit on them. So don't feel pressured to have to make it quick fire.
I'm hearing that song in my head, like, it's the final
I might put
countdown.
that
That's what I'm
as
hearing.
a quick background
It's
right now, cue.
the final
Awesome. So if you're ready to go, I will shoot with question number one.
Okay, I'm nervous.
As you should be. All right, so question number one. How would you describe your teenage years in three words?
Oh, boy. Normally, I wouldn't say it, but I'm going to say it. Totally worth it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I like that. You've combined the three.
I'm trying to embrace it. Had you asked me a few years ago, I would have been like, absolute total hell.
I like the new version. Let's go with your first answer.
Amazing. Me too.
And question number two, complete the following. Community means?
Ooh, community. That's something that's so close to my heart right now. It's something I'm really, really trying to cultivate. I think community means belonging. Yeah.
Yeah, succinct. I love that. And question three, would you rather be liked or respected?
That's a good question. Do you write these? Like, where do you get these from? Wow.
I don't know, but maybe I should just become... Could there be a profession just around curating questions per individual? I feel like someone listening is going to be like, yeah, it's obvious, and I don't know what it is. But if you know out there, then drop me a message.
Well, in coaching, we do a lot of questioning. So
that is actually, that. Yeah, very true, yeah.
You know, I think if given the choice, I think I'm going to say respected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not everyone's going to like you, and that's totally fine. As long as you stand in your truth and that authenticity we've been talking about, like, I think that's what matters.
That's beautiful. Well said. And question four, what value or values do you think will be common among the successful enterprises of the future?
Wow, that's awesome. Great question. As someone who is not an authority on the subject at all, authenticity seems to be the theme of the conversation here. I think authenticity, and I might even say humility.
Mm.
Yeah, I think things are changing. And, you know, the company I'm at now, we acquired a company, and that was their company value, be humble.
Wow.
It really stuck with me, and I, unfortunately, we didn't adopt that value when we acquired them, but they have a really, yeah, the workforce is really beautiful people, and I think that it's because of that value.
I love that, and that really opens up a whole other door of conversation that we can get into, which we won't now, but I would love to maybe do another sit down with you sometime in the future where we go specifically into that, because I think that's a whole fascinating
thing that you've
touched on. If people out there, if you're interested in having us do another sit down, let me know. I'd be up for it.
Yeah.
And question five, are we heading into a society, and you can talk about this on a global or local level, that is more integrated or more disconnected?
Oh, that's a really interesting question, Anand. Wow. More integrated or more disconnected? You know, this sounds like a gotcha, maybe, but I think that's a false dichotomy.
Ooh, okay.
Can it be both?
It can only be both if you can give a 30-second reason as to why.
Okay. I think we are moving into an individualized sort of way of being, and we are going to come back and integrate. That's what I think. I mean, if you look at all the learnings from the pandemic, it was complete isolation, and now we are reintegrating our learnings from that. So feels disconnected, but it's also integrated.
Is it almost that case of you don't know what you have until it's gone? And then are you saying that we kind of need that disconnection to then value that integration piece more?
Yeah, it's like you need the isolation and the introspection in order to come back and reconnect. And here's a great example. We're both alone in our apartments speaking to each other halfway around the world. How does that happen?
That's true, yeah.
Disconnected yet integrated.
Yeah, and probably if it wasn't for the whole situation of being forced to be isolated, this may never have come about. So
Exactly.
that's amazing. I love that. Good example. Love it. And finally, the bonus question, which I do ask everyone.
Whoa, you said there were five.
I'm just all about curveballs. The show never stops throwing curveballs.
Really keeping me on my toes.
But this is the final curveball, or is it? The bonus question being, how would you put your third culture experience into a six-word sentence?
Six-word sentence. Okay. So the thing that comes to mind is like a fish out of water. Fish out of water. Okay, I'm going to cheat a little, but they're tiny words, so I think it counts. Fish out of water learning to swim. Seven.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's great. I love that. That's fine. That's completely acceptable.
Okay,
You can even
great.
say fish outer water, especially being
Out of
American
water.
to like, yeah, just turn out of into one word. That's fine. That's fine.
It.
Awesome. That was amazing. That was, yeah, incredible. I love everything that we covered. And it really, like I said, you're the first one where you're a relative of another guest. And it's great to get those different perspectives, but just also to get to know you even better, because I know you from before, but I wouldn't say I know you well, because we recently connected. But I think this
Yeah.
has been a great kind of insight into your history, but also your mind. So thank you for sharing everything that you did.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, and I cannot wait to listen to Vix. So I'm about to go pick up my mom, and on the way, that is exactly what I'm doing because I've been on the edge of my seat waiting to hear this podcast episode. But I'm just
Awesome.
totally enjoying what you're doing. You're doing such a great job, and thank you for giving us a platform to tell our stories, because the more stories we put out there, there's more kids like us growing up who get to hear it. I wish I had this when I was growing up so much.
Yeah. But no, it's you guys that make it special. So any suggestions of guests that you have, hit me up, and you've already put me in touch with a few great people. So keep doing it, and yeah, let's grow this community together.
Awesome. Thank you.
And that is going to be a wrap. Thank you for joining me. My aim is to not only spotlight the lives and experiences that led the guests to understand their passions and values, but to see how you can apply some of their perspectives to your own situation in a way that you may not have considered before. And if you are able to connect with something that was discussed, try and apply it to your own life. And whether you agree or not, reach me by email or on Instagram, as from next month, I'll be showcasing some of the best responses from each of you on the Instagram and Facebook page. I'm building out a third culture tribe, which will involve you guys, a platform where your experiences and passions can be spotlighted and shared to an audience, much like Shavika did in our conversation today. If you're interested to be a part of this growing tribe, then head over to podcast.thejourneyonwards.com/tribe to leave me your email address, and I will be in touch very soon with the details. As always, the contact information for myself and the guest will be in the show notes. Don't hesitate to reach out on anything that has been discussed. I'm always grateful for your feedback and reviews if you're on Apple Podcasts. I'll be back next week for another episode. So until then, I hope your next week is even better than the last.